Welcome, Ecom Logistics Nation. Thank you for joining today's episode. We're on a mission to share e-commerce logistics insights, trends, successes, and challenges from the leaders and innovators in our space.
I think it's better to operate with a forward motion instead of operate from a defensive crouch. And I think that operating boldly, taking more risk, leaning into opportunity, right? Like seeing what's around the corner, even if it might cost you a little bit, if your hand's going to get burned, that's okay.
Welcome, friends, to the Ecom Logistics Podcast, and thank you for joining us today. So excited for this episode as Ninad and I are joined by our good friend, Ben Emmerich, co-founder and CEO of Tusk Logistics. Ben has spent his career in the e-commerce and small parcel space with 15 years of experience between Google and Shippo. And somehow in that time, Ben managed to launch his first entrepreneurial venture, Ben's Dry Ice, which he sold in 2016. I had to get that in there, Ben, after 4 years of running his business. Last week at Manifest in Vegas, Ben officially launched Tusk Logistics to the world. Ben, it is so great to have you join us today, and welcome to the show, buddy.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I mean, you can't just drop it at Dry Ice, Ben. Sorry.
I know he wasn't expecting the Ben's Dry Ice to come in.
Exactly.
So there it is.
Yeah, that's where we got to start, Ben. What's Ben's Dry Ice?
So I was working at Google at the time, and I was on the operations team for a product called Google Offers, which was like, for a while, Google had a version of Groupon called Google Offers. Mm-hmm. And I needed to create a publicly facing Google Maps merchant site. Like, I needed to basically pretend that I was a merchant on Google Maps to do a bunch of like internal testing for Google Offers. And I was trying to pick the most obscure business I could pick because it needed to be public. And so I used my personal email, my personal cell phone number. And then at one point in the creation steps, you have to choose from a dropdown of like what type of business you are. And Dry Ice was on the list, no lie. And I was like, oh, that's suitably obscure. Like, I'll choose that. And then as you know, because this is a fake business on Google Maps, they were like, all right, well, what's your business name? And I said, well, Ben's Dry Ice. And guys, no lie, like within a day, I started getting calls. And all I had was a Google Maps listing. And I started getting all these calls from numbers I didn't know. And people would be like, is this Ben's Dry Ice? And I'd be like, oh my God. And I would like kind of, I was like, sorry, I got to go. And I would like, at first I kind of like, you know, avoided the people, but then my then fiance, now wife was like, hey, you can't have people like calling you. You got to like at least send them somewhere. So then I looked up like, well, where do you actually buy dry ice? It turns out it's really hard to buy. In San Francisco at the time, there was like one grocery store that sold it and then a welding supply store in like Bayview, Hunters Point, which is like way like a neighborhood way on the south side of San Francisco. So I would send people there and then they were like, well, can't you just deliver it to me? And then finally one day I was like a Friday and I was about to get off work and someone called and they're like, can't you deliver it? And I was like, you know what? Yeah, I can deliver it to you. And they're just like, well, how much is it? And I said, because I knew what the grocery store sold it for, and they sold it for like $2.50 a pound. And I said, it's $8 a pound. I just like picked a number out of my hat. And they said, okay, can I pay you by credit card? I said, no, I'm a cash only operation. So I was basically like a illicit dry ice dealer for cash. And what I would do, I didn't have a car at the time, so I would rent a zip car, drive to the Lucky's grocery store on Masonic Avenue in San Francisco, buy dry ice, then drive it to the person, get cash, then return my zip car and then go home on the bus. And it was like, I did that for a couple of months and then one thing led to another and I got a wholesaler and I eventually got a warehouse and a team of drivers and it became a real business. And yeah,
Ben's
I ran it for 4 years and then it is now in the very capable hands of a guy named Kevin, who I sold it to, and he continues to run it. And I just synced with Kevin, and Ben's Dry Ice now does over $1 million a year.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
That is amazing.
I love it, Ben. Yes,
I love it. The hustle has never stopped.
Always been there.
You know what what this reminds me of, and before we kind of dive into like all the conversations, is there's this other story. I don't know if I've discussed this previously or not, but you had to create a Google business because you were working on and validating or testing something that you needed to do for Google, right? Mm-hmm. So when I was with FedEx, at one point, we needed to work on creating integrations into Amazon. So I asked my system architect, like, we need to build into FBA and figure it out, how to connect a warehouse management system to FBA and make all the API calls, etc. So my architect goes and researches, and in the research, he creates a seller account and then starts arbitraging products. This guy comes, I don't know the precise time, but like 6 months, 8 months later, he comes in and goes, Ninad, you remember that research I did? Yeah, I just crossed $1 million mark in revenue. And then he got like distributorship for Microsoft products and whatnot. And like a year later, he left being a systems architect, which I think pays pretty well. He had crossed that threshold, right? And I had reached out a couple of years ago, and he's still doing it. And he's a big seller on Amazon's platform and other platforms. So accidental businesses, brother.
Yeah, right. Accidental businesses. And also, like, there's a lot of ways to make money out there, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you just have to kind of, like, find your groove, find your niche, like, find a set of customers that are being underserved and, you know.
Ben's Dry Ice.
That's right.
Ben's Dry Ice.
And I think maybe just, for our audience too, as we've been talking about, the three of us actually got to know each other when you were at Google, like you had just mentioned, and we were at FedEx mm-hmm. Supply Chain, and we were working on an e-commerce fulfillment and small parcel transportation strategic initiative together. So, you know, we've had the privilege of knowing you for a long time. Some great, great times during the last several years, but wanted to have you kind of beyond the Ben's Dry Ice story, kind of have you share your journey and story with the audience and basically, you had an aha moment for Dry Ice, but what was the aha moment for starting, Tusk, which again, like I mentioned, you launched last week at Manifest.
My aha moment, quite honestly, was a moment that I had when I was working at Shippo, where we were, so at Shippo, which is a shipping platform for small and medium businesses, like think of Shopify stores that are starting out can go and download the Shippo app, and that's how they access labels and discounted rates. A really good program, really good team. I was on that team, and my responsibility was to lead BD specifically for leading partnerships with parcel carriers. And what I realized was that the ecosystem that we operated within was highly dependent on the legacy national parcel carriers, the FedExes, the UPSs, the Postals. And at the same time, I could recognize and was doing some deals with regional parcel carriers. So these are the carriers that cover a city, a state, or a group of states. So there's regionals across the U.S., and in total, there's like 1,000 people you could consider regional carriers. Really, there's like 20 to 30 big ones. And I was recognizing that these regionals gave an incredible value. The cost was low. The service was great. The speed was faster than the legacy guys. But they were very hard to access at scale. And amidst all of this, I was realizing like, oh my gosh, there's a huge opportunity here to be a single conduit for technical, commercial, and operational access to these regionals. And quite honestly, like for a variety of reasons, all of which are legit, like Shippo, who was my employer at the time, as well as others in the space, like didn't emphasize the regionals as much. And so I made the call that leaving Shippo to start Tusk was the next thing that I wanted to do. It was really about putting shippers first and giving them more value on their ground parcels in the US and making sure that they had an easy, scalable path to unlock the value that regionals bring.
Love that. Love that. And I think too, I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. There have been regionals here locally for
Ohio, baby.
Pitt, Ohio. Pitt, Ohio for decades and decades. But they really served that local market really well. It was usually, you know, they pick up and deliver same day, that type of thing. So the regionals have been here, but obviously what I'm hearing you say is they've actually transitioned. Have they transitioned their model, or have they just now gotten access to a wider variety of packages that, you know, originate maybe across the country or somewhere else that are, you know, well, shipped into them?
Dan, that's a great question. So it's so funny. Like when I like tell with friends and I meet a friend of a friend, they're like, "Hey, what do you do?" And I explain Tusk. It's so funny. Like I'll say, "Hey, where did you grow up?" And they'll say, Madison. I was like, "Do you remember Dunham's Express?" And they're like, "Oh yeah." And it's like those vans you see on the road all the time.
Yep.
But like, it's a generic logo and it kind of like fades into the background of your life. Yep. And like, you don't, growing up, I saw Dunham's Express, like, you know, every week in Madison where I grew up. I had no idea what Dunham's Express was. Well, turns out that was a regional carrier, and they were very focused on like the southern Wisconsin market, Madison, Milwaukee. They had some line hauls. Honestly, they've been like bought and repurposed. So Dunham's Express is no longer a thing, which is another aspect of the regional ecosystem. But, you know, like they were a local regional carrier and they have always been around. So regional carriers, the traditional regional carrier started as a messenger service. So think of like a paycheck delivery program, right? Or legal documents that needed to be delivered from office to office. Like that is the nexus for many regionals. There are other regionals that have started because, you know, a former FedEx operations guy said, "Hey, like, yeah, I'm sick of this big purple machine that I'm working in. I'm going to go out and I'm going to hire two drivers. I'm going to lease three trucks. I'm going to drive the third truck myself. And I have one anchor tenant who can give me enough volume to keep the business going for a while. And then I'm going to go out and sell local business." And all of a sudden this guy has a fleet of delivery. You know, he serves a local area, but it's very dense. It's very focused on where he's based, or she for that matter. And quite honestly, like, these regionals have always been around. They've always had an incredible network in the area that they serve. They have a pulse on the customers in a much more meaningful way because they're just closer, physically closer to the customers that they serve. And then you get into like 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, like that, the late aughts. And that's when e-commerce meaningfully hit the regionals, led by Amazon. So Amazon was looking at their network, seeing their growth and saying, "Okay, well, we depend highly on the legacy national parcel carriers, but we need a fourth leg to the stool." And they were like the pioneer in direct injecting volume into the regionals. And many regionals said no to Amazon because they're notoriously ruthless when it comes to negotiating and margins and performance and stuff. Like, very smart regionals just said like, "Nah, we're good. We don't need you."
Right.
But many regionals took that volume. A really good example is OnTrack on the West Coast. OnTrack, they drank a fire hose of volume from Amazon, give or take 2010. And what they did a similar thing to what UPS has used Amazon for. They built out their network with Amazon volume. They built out their network. They built out their density. They created new sortation. They used it as kind of like essentially a line of credit, really. Like, you know, they use Amazon volume and revenue as a line of credit, because it was like an exploding line of credit, like a balloon loan on your mortgage. And the blow up was not that the interest rate was going to go up. The balloon was that, "Oh shit, Amazon's just going to pull the volume."
Yep,
and right. I'm going to have very little notice when they pull it, but you have to kind of like, you know, it's a bet. And it was a good bet for OnTrack, quite honestly. It's been a great bet for UPS. Yep. Like, UPS is kind of like written, like, there will be HBS studies of how UPS has used Amazon to their own advantage strategically. And I'm saying this to two former FedEx guys, but like, FedEx has kind of missed the boat on using Amazon as a strategic advantage. And I think UPS has knocked it out of the park. Sorry, I'm like pontificating here, but the reason that UPS has done really well with this is because they saw Amazon for what they were, which is an incredible partner, a wonderful source of volume, but ruthless and out to optimize for Amazon's customers, right? Like, that's Amazon's North Star.
Yep.
Amazon is happy to use UPS. They're nice people. You can, you know, go out to dinner with them and bite into a steak, and like, they're good people, but like, they optimize for their customer and they don't give a shit about your business.
Yeah.
Recognizing that, UPS said, okay, we are strategically going to take tons of Amazon volume, as much as we can get. At one point, it was like, correct me if I'm wrong, like 14, 15% of their volume, give or take.
Right. Yeah.
And they took that and they said, okay, we're going to build out our ground delivery network. We're going to like lease the best trucks, get Teamster drivers to drive those trucks. Our routes are going to be denser. We're going to be able to drive more efficiency. But at the same time, we are going to strategically invest over the long term in backfilling Amazon volume, which is very high volume, low margin, with volume from SMBs, which is very low volume, high margin. So they built the DAP program, the Digital Access Program.
That's right, yeah.
And I just saw a post from Kevin Warren, their CMO on LinkedIn. That program does $2.3 billion in 2022.
Wow.
$2.3 billion. And now Carol Tomei just had earnings last week. And SMB volume is something like 25% of UPS's overall margin.
Yep.
Like they saw what was going to happen.
Yeah.
They needed to de-risk their dependence on Amazon, but they used Amazon to like help them foundationally on their operation and backfill it with SMB volume. And now they're just like, they're going to blow the lid off the thing.
But it's this is what, you know, you kind of look back at things. So we were at FedEx, you know, mid 2010s, right? And you kind of get to hear the chatter and see the strategic direction you're taking. And I think it's all strategic bets, right? So yeah. I can tell you FedEx's position at that point was, listen, we don't want to be beholden to Amazon. And we don't want, it's not just Amazon. Even their larger client base like Walmart or whatnot, right? We never want a single customer to represent more than a single digit percentage of our total revenue, which I think is a very strategic move. But, and you look at UPS, right? Like that bet paid off is because they were able to design it, but also replace that volume as the volume started shrinking back as Amazon starts building Amazon logistics, right? It's all timing, right? It's also like the exact same story as the regionals that got involved that actually, you know, took advantage of that infrastructure build opportunity that comes from the volume that they got. So,
you know, I would say like FedEx, you're right. They made a strategic decision. And quite honestly, in the moment, like I remember being with you guys in Indianapolis for that site visit. And that was right when Fred Smith had said like, hey, we're going to like cap Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself like, man, that might be a good idea. Like it's risky what UPS is doing. And so like it was a totally legitimate decision. The lesson I take away from this personally, like now that I'm in charge of a team, I think it's better to be bolder. Like, I think it's better to be, to operate with a forward motion instead of operate from a defensive crouch. And I think that operating boldly, taking more risk, leaning into opportunity, right? Like seeing what's around the corner, even if it might cost you a little bit, if your hand's going to get burned, that's okay. You know?
Yeah.
Like my lesson is UPS made the right call in hindsight. But they made the right call because they were like courageous and they were bold. And honestly, the regionals as an ecosystem, they were also courageous in that situation.
Yeah.
Like they took the volume, they used it for what it was. And as a result, now you have an ecosystem of regionals that has been just like eating e-commerce volume for the last 10, 12 years and are as good, if not better, than the legacy national parcel carriers in the markets that they serve.
In the markets that they serve, right? Yeah.
They can do it for cheaper, right? They can do it for cheaper because their operations are more efficient. They have denser routing, et cetera. And the service and performance is on par or better than FedEx and UPS. It's incredible. Now, the challenge is like, if you're a shipper, how do you get coverage with the regionals? It's a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah.
You know, you have to go to each one. You have to find the good ones. You have to negotiate with them. You have to integrate them and all of their tech stacks are different. Then you have to take each individual integration and integrate it into your own systems like tracking, warehouse operations, marketing, et cetera. And then you have to own, maintain, and monitor all of these regional connections. Like at the end of the day, it's unrealistic for most shippers, right? Unless you're a Walmart or Target. And so if you're the director of ops at a D2C merchant who self-fulfills, you look at the regionals and you say, oh man, I would love to access the regionals. I know that they're good. Like I see their trucks on the road all the time where I live. but the juice isn't worth the squeeze. I just don't have the bandwidth as a team to be able to integrate with them. And like, that's the problem that TUS solves.
Yep.
We are the one point of contact for technical, commercial, operational access. And at the end of the day, we put shippers first with lower prices, reliable service, proactive support.
And that's with complete national coverage using the regionals?
Yeah, so we're live today in 70% of the U.S. population. We do really well where the people live, right? So think of the NFL markets, like that's where we're live. Markets like New York, Chicago, L.A., SF, Seattle, Dallas, like the Triangle in Florida, Tampa, yep. Orlando, Miami. Like these are markets where there are a strong regional ecosystem, but shippers just haven't really utilized it. This is also like the right time to be building this because FedEx and UPS are just hammering their shippers with increases.
Yeah, so that's kind of my next question, right? So now you have all of these increases coming on one side, and we keep hearing about carrier diversification, right? Like you need to start carrier diversifying, right? Like,
so I have an issue with this.
Yeah, talk to me.
Carrier diversification is 100% the correct way, and I say that selfishly to be blunt. But I feel like our industry is too much of a professorial industry where experts tell an operator what they should do. Like, hey, you should diversify, or hey, you should look at utilizing a low price, low speed service like Parcel Select, or you should optimize your pick and pack to take advantage of labor efficiencies. Like you could. It's very like advice based. And in building Tusk, like I'm getting away from advice. I'm just going to do it for them. I'm just going to friggin' do it for them.
Exactly. Diversification also, like if you are going to slow roll this entire thing, right? Like, oh, I'm diversifying. There is your earned discounts with the nationals because you are slowly going into regionals, et cetera, right? Like you need a national footprint because otherwise, yeah, with the cost increases and anything that you gain by going to regional, you're going to end up losing by still relying on the nationals, with you losing your earned discount as well as you.
So yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Nanad. Like we get this question all the time. I actually got it yesterday from a shipper. They're like, well, you know, Ben, what happens when, you know, our volume tiers, we need to balance those out? The answer is like, we just sit with their teams and we actually just look at their current volume and their growth. And together we calculate like, okay, at what point do you unlock which tier from your national provider? Let's get you to that best tier, and then the rest is gravy. So the rest you can send via people like me. Now, it's important to say the reason we can do that is because we charge people differently.
Yeah.
So we charge a monthly platform fee to every one of our shippers.
Right.
So this is a percentage.
So you're
of the
not arbitraging on top, right? Like it's like I'm going to get rates from here, and I'm going to bury all of this, or I'll consolidate all of these rates and go, I'm going to now give you a discount over a regional, but in reality, your discount's like 70%. So technically speaking, in a model of that nature, you would be able to, the more volume you push through your network, the more discounting ends up happening for the customers, right?
Think of it like Costco. You pay a Costco membership every year,
right?
You can buy rotisserie chicken for $4.85.
Yeah, that's right.
It's $4.85 in Chicago. It's $4.85 for Dan in Pittsburgh. It's $4.85 for you in Canada. Like, it's $4.85.
Yep.
Well, actually, like, in Canada, no, it'd be like $7. It'd be like $7 in Canadian dollars.
Yeah, something.
Yeah. But, like, Costco can give you that chicken at essentially a break even. Well, technically, separate story about Costco.
Yeah.
They lose money on the chicken, but that...
But and they completely vertically own that supply chain. Of
oh
the
yeah,
chicken.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. They own their own chicken supply chain. They also own their own hot dog factory in Tracy, California. A whole hot dog factory that just produces for Costco. It's the coolest thing.
Yeah.
But we charge a monthly platform fee. That monthly platform fee, that is our net rev. That's where Tusk makes its money. We also do mark up the labels slightly because we need to be able to do a couple of important things. Selfishly, we have to cover our operating costs.
Absolutely.
Right? So if a shipper goes from 100 to 1,000 to 10,000 labels, we have to have some kind of coverage mechanism that scales with volume. But we also use that markup to cover really painful fees like fuel and residential surcharges.
Oh, yeah.
So we offer a loaded rate into the market, right? And we essentially, because we have a monthly platform fee, we are incentivized to keep label costs as low as possible.
Yeah.
And this is like very simple, but very revolutionary in the shipping ecosystem in the US today. Like for a provider to be incentivized to keep costs low, it's absurd that that's as innovative as it is, but like it's incredibly innovative. Everybody else is like, everybody else makes more money when the labels go up because they all have their hands in each other's pockets, taking margin off of that top value. Like when you pay $10 for a priority mail label on, you know, a platform, there are slices of that $10 that are not going to the postal service, right?
Absolutely.
Well, maybe Ben, too, I want to go back to your example of a direct-to-consumer brand that self-fulfills and the DC of operations, right? He or she is like struggling with how to figure it out. Aside from the struggling how to figure it out, you know, a lot of conversations I've had with brands, retailers, even 3PLs is they have a fear of like, I don't think I have enough volume. Like I don't have 75 or 100 packages going into the state of New York every day. So if I don't have this like dense, if I don't have packages that are going into areas in high density, I don't think regionals are a good solution for me, or I'm not ready for them yet. So maybe this might be a little 101, but I think it'd be very helpful for people to understand, like, is there a threshold? Is there kind of a basement number that people should, you know, if they're at X orders per day, it's the right time to at least be having conversations and exploring what the regionals can do for them.
We do best with anyone that has an overall volume of 100 parcels per day or more out of one facility. On average, Tusk pulls 20 to 30% of the volume. So with like the lowest volume shippers for Tusk, we usually pull out 20 to 30 parcels per day.
And that's lower than I would have thought.
Yeah,
that's, I mean, that's much lower than I would have thought.
And that's not into a single regional, right?
So Dan, to your question, it's lower than people think, which is a big unlock.
And from a regional perspective, even if you're individually looking at going to a regional, that would be kind of the threshold that you should be looking at, right? Of course, you know, approach Tusk, but like if you are very regional as a provider and you can build a singular relationship with a regional, so from what would be your advice as you approach the regionals? Like, don't have fear if you got 100 parcels a day or if it's maybe 20 parcels a day.
Well, first of all, putting Tusk completely aside, regional carriers in the United States are incredible partners. They do right by their shippers. And I would encourage everyone, every shipper out there, to call a regional. I mean, call me first, but if my phone line is busy, call a regional directly. The reason being is the regionals are, because their op is smaller, their operation is often more flexible. So for example, if you have 25 pieces bound for a regional's footprint, that regional is in your neighborhood every day, well, they might give you a discounted pickup fee or waive your pickup fee because they already have trucks on your block. Like, why not? Like, for the regional, it's like 25 extra pieces in their network and they already have the truck on your block. Like, why wouldn't they do it? The reason for that is like 110 years ago when UPS was founded or whenever it was, they explicitly said, like, we do not do local delivery. If you want to do local delivery, go to these messenger services, right? We don't do local delivery. Well, they do local delivery. They just don't want to pass the benefit of that lower operating cost onto their shippers. Like it's just a margin play.
Okay.
And by the way, it's their right to do so, right? Like that's how the ecosystem has been built. Like this is something that people acknowledge is the case. Like whatever. Like people still, there's a lot more volume that rolls on UPS than Tusk, let me tell you. Like there's a reason people still use them. But like this is a really key area of differentiation for Tusk.
So Ben, what do you expect the nationals to do now? How do you see the future of the nationals? You know, based on what I heard from you right now, as well as last week when we were at Manifest, you had the American Eagle or Quiet Logistics kind of make the announcement. There's now going to be 20 national networks, right? Don't know what that means. That's going to be something at the end of this month that expect an announcement from Quiet, which it seems like they are going to be utilizing regionals with what Tusk is doing, what's being expected in the market. And it almost feels like every other week, or at least, you know, in 2022 and 2021, you would turn around and there was a new company that was, you know, popping up out in the industry, trying to do something either in the first mile, middle mile, last mile, or the entire value chain. Where do you see the nationals kind of play? What strategic role do they play as all of this evolves in the market? And I mean, there's more competition, period.
The national parcel carriers have incredible operations run by like really smart people. Like they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, I feel like the existence of Tusk and others that drive value to shippers. I mean, you mentioned Quiet, like they do an incredible job. I think too, like, you know, Quiet's a great example. Like the more competition, the better. Like let us get into the market and let us earn it on our own merits, you know?
Yeah.
Like who's ever can do it for the best value with the most reliable service and support, like they'll win over time. And at the end of the day, the shipper wins. And that's our goal.
It's amazing.
Love it. Love it. Maybe on that note, Ben, first want to just thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to spend with us. This has been
educational
and awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. I so appreciate you guys. Like your partnership and your support, like when I was at Shippo, when I was at Google, when I was starting Tusk, I mean, you guys are just the best. So thank you.
Yeah. We feel the same, buddy. And, you know, when you, again, I think in the supply chain logistics world, you know, there's a lot of good people and you, Ben, are certainly one of those good people that look out for other people. And I love seeing it come full circle for you right now. But want to give you the opportunity real quick. How do people follow you? How do people learn more about Tusk Logistics? Social handles, whatever you want to, you know, share with the audience so they could learn more and find you.
Yeah, thanks, man. I would say the best place to go is tusklogistics.com. If you click the Get Started link at the top right-hand side of the page, that leads to a form where our team can reach out after you fill it out. And then on socials, the best place to go is LinkedIn. So my name is Ben Emmerich, E-M-M-R-I-C-H. Follow me on LinkedIn, and I post about regionals and the small parcel space and Tusk. And you can email me directly, so ben@tusklogistics.com. Feel free to reach out. Would love to meet more shippers and see if we can drive value for their op.
Hey, amazing.
Yeah, I'll just end with, if you don't even need regional carriers or support, just get to know Ben. He is genuinely one of those people that will warm your soul. That's how I describe him. So please get in touch with him.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast to maximize your supply chain. Available on all major podcasting channels. Thank you for listening and see you in the next episode.